Hadi bakalım.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Human Reaction. We are glad to have you with us. And, you know, it's just another beautiful day. I'm glad to be back in the land of freedom.
The Welcome United back
States.
From Europe.
Yes. From the land of tyranny to the land of freedom, right? Because obviously we're living in the land of freedom. If you watch the news, you know that, right? Obviously.
So. You escaped the old country.
I did.
Right? And you didn't get put away for any Facebook posts while you're there.
I was very careful to stay off of Facebook while I was there. Yes, yes. And I did not experience any migrant crime or, you know, any sort of malarkey at all during my travels. So I'm very fortunate for that, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe it's all hype. Maybe it's all just our algorithms showing us all the blood and gore that we want to see Europe go through as Americans.
I imagine it's just like how Europeans see us as just like school shootings. That's the only thing that happens in America.
Right.
It's like, yeah, you use all of our products constantly.
Fat people in school shootings.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly.
I know, right, yeah.
A little more texture.
A little more texture than that. But it was a great trip, and I'm glad to be back here in the studio with you, David.
Yeah, I'm happy to see you, man.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
So the government is back open, but who cares? We hit 2,000 subscribers, baby!
Cheers to that. Cheers to that. That
was
a big milestone. It's taken a long time to get there. What feels like a long time? I think in the grand scheme of how long it takes to grow a show, it's probably not a long time.
I don't know. I mean, you know, if you look at it like this, every year we get about 1,000 subscribers. So by 100 years, we'll be somewhat competitive for the largest...
There better like be
middle-sized YouTube channels.
Really hope there's some like logarithmic moment in there.
Man, things are going so well right now, though. We're getting lots of views. You know, our audience is growing. I mean, if you look back too, if you look at the lifetime, we're now at 759,621 views.
Total views.
Yeah, 250,000 total views.
That's pretty killer.
Our stuff on YouTube. That's just YouTube.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So, and we got about 19,800 hours of watch time.
Whoo. Thank you for spending your time with us. Jeez. Genuinely, from the bottom of our hearts, thank you.
Just to know that many people have watched you, just like looked at your face, is weird.
It is weird.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just, oh, man. So, our monthly audience is around 21,000 people. Now, that includes shorts. So, it's a lot of people just seeing our, you know, 1 minute stuff, but also, you know, our casual viewers, like the people who check our stuff real regularly, 794 people.
Wow. Wow.
Dude, we almost talk to 1,000 people every week.
That's pretty incredible.
That's crazy.
That's pretty cool.
Our most regular viewers over the lifetime is about 183. So like these are the guys who are watching every single thing.
Hardcore.
But even just knowing that there's 183 people who are just clicking on our stuff all the time, that's just insane.
You guys are really right? pumping our tires over here. Thank you.
Well, I mean, it's our time to celebrate, man. This is a moment. When we hit 1,000, we had champagne. We had 2,000, we had beer. So when we hit 3,000, we'll have whiskey, and then we'll just keep going from there. By, you know, 50,000, we'll be, I don't know, hitting lines of Coke or something like that.
Hopefully we're like taking a private jet somewhere real nice.
So on Spotify, I pulled those numbers too. We got 20,000 all-time plays on Spotify.
Not bad.
20,000.
Not
bad. Yeah, that's people like checking out just the long form podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Well, and you got to take into context over all this stuff too, how challenging it can be as a political podcast, particularly one that's outside of the mainstream narrative, to gain traction when, you know, we have these headwinds of a lot of the platforms out there either overtly or covertly, you know, shadow banning or not promoting our stuff as much. I mean, a lot of channels suffer from this, and I don't think we're any different. I don't know that we have any hard evidence of that, but certainly we see things are doing really well and then things just drop off, perhaps like in the case of TikTok recently.
Yeah, TikTok, it's become the blue sky of short form video, man. It is like, go to our TikTok and look at the comments. The only people who see our videos anymore, it used to be people like, oh, that's cool or whatever, and there's like dialogue, it's like a mixture. It's nothing but progressives.
Oh, yeah.
Since September, I swear to God, Larry Ellison came in and be like, everyone's liberal now, and that's the only people who see our stuff for some reason. It's so weird.
And it was going really well before that.
Like, yeah.
We had videos achieving close to 1 million views.
No, we capped 1 million.
Did we?
Or no, wait, just under. We're like 900,000.
Yeah, it was like 950 or something.
Dude, yeah, we had, TikTok was our first place where we really got a little success. And that was under the old TikTok when you could talk about things on TikTok.
Turns out the CCP really wanted us to succeed.
Exactly. They're like, these guys, I like them. Despite all the...
I like them.
Sorry. That was too good. But our regular audience on Spotify is around 200 people, meaning 200 people every week watching our stuff.
Thank you.
Right? So total, almost 400 people between just like watching every single thing we put out.
Yes.
Whoa.
Super cool.
I don't know 400 people. I don't know all you people. That's weird. It's a bizarre feeling.
Yeah, say hi. Say hi in the comments on Spotify, on YouTube. Just say hello and like maybe generally where you're from. What state, what country. We'd love to know where you guys are all at. And thank you again for watching the show. Let us know like what you want to hear us talk about too. I mean, obviously, if you're watching, you like it. But if you have any feedback, man, feed it to us. Mm-hmm. We take it.
Excellent. And also, if you just watch our show, definitely go out and check out Liam McCollum. We do an associated show with him. He's our colleague. He's doing does an interview show. Really awesome. He just hit 3,500 subscribers. He jumped right past us like in a major way. And he's interviewed such cool people like Ron Paul, Scott Horton, Dave Smith. And, you know, we've been able to like help him out with his show and he's kind of pulled us along with him some. And it's been really awesome.
It's been great. Yeah, it's been a really great partnership. I remember when we sort of hatched this plan at the Libertarian National Convention last May. And we're like, hey, we should work together. And so far, so great, man. It's been awesome. And kudos to him for all the success and hard work that he's put into it. And he just did a great episode. His second episode with Dave Smith came out last Saturday. If you haven't watched that, definitely go check it out, The Liam McCollum Show. We'll make sure that there's a link somewhere to be found to get to that.
Mm-hmm. So we want to cap this celebration of hitting 2,000 with a very soft, vague announcement.
We're going to soon so hard on you.
Yeah. So before the end of the year, our plan is to go live and to start doing live podcasts Thursday nights probably and hitting, you know, just trying out the harder thing to do, which it's one thing to do it where we always got the backfall of like having Bennett fix things. Now, you know, we'll be able to do hopefully be able to run live and figure all that stuff out. And then second, rolling out new members benefits. We know SCIF members, we've been not giving you everything that we promised. That's been because of just changes in our personal lives and changes in our schedule that have made it difficult to do the SCIF. Additionally to that, the algorithm was punishing us, we suspect. The SCIF would only get, you know, the amount of members we had. Well, we don't have a ton of members, so the couple dozen people would watch it, but then that's it. And so it kind of like tell the algorithm that our audience is only a couple dozen people.
Right.
And it's just never, it just wasn't working. So we're going to reformulate that, give you guys some new benefits. We'll still have merch and all that kind of stuff too, but we're going to find out new benefits for you guys.
For sure. And if you have any ideas, if you're like, hey, I would really love a one-on-one political coaching call with David because I want to run for office. You know what? We can figure that out, right, David?
Yeah,
I'm just over here conscripting David into more work.
I'll give some advice. No problem.
Heck yeah. This episode is brought to you by Revved Up Promo, the official apparel partner of Human Reaction. Revved Up is a premier full-service shop specializing in laser engraving, screen printing, and embroidery. Not only are they now making all of our apparel right down the road from us, they can do the same for your brand and ship it to you anywhere in the world. Revved Up helps you navigate the extensive universe of merch options and uses state-of-the-art techniques to showcase your brand in its very best light. So if you want to support our show and our generous sponsor, you can now do so by buying our merch and by turning to Revved Up Promo for your own custom apparel needs. Reach them at revveduppromo.com. That's with two V's and two P's, or just check the show notes for a link. Awesome. All right. With all of that celebration aside, we have another celebration, I guess, which is that the government is open again. Like, yeah.
How's that like a sad sound?
I don't want one. Well, yeah, that almost got there. We all knew what we wanted to hear in that moment.
Yikes.
We'll just play that in our heads. How do you feel about the government reopening, David?
Well, you know, we're going to dive into it. So they cut a deal, but 43 days of shutdown, right? And it got to the end where they ran out of money for things like SNAP. And that's where we really knew that the shit was going to hit the fan.
Oh, and paying air traffic controllers, which was relatively pertinent to me being in Europe and being like, am I going to be able to get back? Fortunately, domestic flights were mostly affected. International was not. So that was good. But that was a huge snafu. I mean, it's still affecting airports around the country.
Right. And the fact the response to that was in a bill from the House Republicans privatizing air traffic control in the United States.
I know. I was thinking about that.
But I put that on X and I literally got like, you know, like, you can't do that. That's silly. Like,
stupid libertarian.
Do that. Yeah, right.
Well, you know what was interesting to me is because I was watching this from afar, checking in on the news daily or so as I could. And I noticed that at a certain point, right around, I guess it was last weekend, right around Saturday, Sunday, it went from, okay, commercial flights are going to be curtailed at certain airports, cut down by 5 or 10% or whatever it was, to general, meaning private aviation was going to be affected. Mm. And then it was like the next day that the Republicans came, you know, on the news and were like, we've got a plan. We think we've got the votes to figure it out. I imagine they got some pretty feisty phone calls from their high net worth donors to say, hey, don't you dare ground my private jet. Get this figured out.
Yeah, so...
It wasn't Snap. I just don't think they were that concerned about Snap. The rich people.
That's the thing that drives me crazy is that air traffic control could so easily be privatized. Canada did it.
Did they?
Yeah. That's, 1996, they did it.
That's unexpected.
Well, I mean, Canada... the 90s were good for Canada, right? One of the reasons why Ontario has been such a dominant economic force is because they did regulatory reform change on their land and their natural resource access. Lumber to oil to gold and palladium and all kinds of things. America has functionally not changed our land use, functionally since the 1960s, and where we cracked down on all environmental impact, and therefore, you know, you basically it's a very difficult, very costly to do anything in the United States. But Canada in the 1990s, they changed direction substantially, leading to Ontario's growth, where they've really become, you know, such an economic powerhouse in the central of Canada. America, we deregulated, you know, railroads and all kinds of travel during the Carter administration, which is one of the biggest successes of deregulation period in the world. Like the economic growth from that has been tremendous, but we just kind of like did that and we're like, well, that's enough of that.
That's good.
Never touching that again. And that was a Democrat controlled Congress and presidency did that.
Interesting.
Yes.
Well, different Democrats.
Yeah. Republicans held one of the two chambers, if I remember right. But still, I mean, but it was economic consensus at the time, huge crisis going on with transportation, and they, you know, brought it to the forefront.
Yeah,
when they would pass it. But you know, we have this crisis right now, but the Republicans are like, Mexicans are getting health care or something like that, right? They're not focused on any of that right now.
Right,
so
right. So back to Snap. So that was a big thing that mm-hmm. finally got refunded, which was good. A lot of impoverished people, potentially some other people grifting on the system a little bit. I don't really personally know, but they got their benefits back. Mm-hmm. Which
yes,
is good.
But I did see some stuff about the SNAP reforms not holding for some reason. Like, there's a lot of reports about people who are, you know, selling on SNAP, grocery stores, places like that, selling a lot of soda and chips and things like that.
The MAHA reforms that were supposed to curtail what could be purchased with SNAP benefits
haven't taken effect, aren't being had on the ground. I don't know, but it's interesting reports on that. I haven't seen anything systemic yet or anything official. It's been mostly just people from the ground reporting.
Yeah,
that this is what they're seeing.
One interesting thing that I did see was that the shelves at places like Walmart were like totally full, whereas previously they were well picked over, you know, particularly in maybe some of the more junk food oriented sections of the store. There were like whole sections of the store's employees not doing anything because they didn't have anything to do.
Whoa.
While the government was shut down, indicating, you know, perhaps that a lot of Walmart's revenue, and I think a substantial portion of Walmart's revenue comes from SNAP specifically.
I bet. Yeah, probably put a lot of pressure on Republicans to get it back in.
Yeah.
And that's really what happened. I mean, the big picture, not to bury the lead, is Republicans worked with 6 moderate Democrats to reopen the government and pretty much got nothing for it. Right. There was no reforms. I mean, the hope, right, was we would save some money because we're broke, right? The country's broke.
More than broke.
Yeah, a lot more than broke.
1776. Once again.
You know, so Obamacare happens during the during the COVID crisis. Congress passes these extra extra awesome, extra additional Affordable Care Act subsidies to make it to better, more, even more subsidize healthcare insurance purchases on the exchange. A lot of people took advantage of that. A lot of people are now on that dole.
Right.
They were going to say, well, Obamacare wasn't passed with that. This is an extra benefit and we can't afford everything because we're broke. So we're going to not renew this. And Democrats, of course, freaked out and shut down the government. So what did the GOP get out of it? Well, a whole lot of nothing, right? What they basically did is they cut a deal that says there's full federal funding till January 30th. So we're just kicking the can down the road on any kind of fiscal reform. Yep. Not surprising to any watcher of this podcast, of course. I mean, the irregular process is you pass appropriation bills, you know, based upon a budget sent to you by the president. You pass appropriations, accepting some things, rejecting some things. And then it goes to a bill that you then vote on, right? And then it goes to the Senate, you know, like that. That process hasn't happened since before the creation of the iPad. So so they fund farm subsidy programs, army building plan, and Congress. Congress funded themselves for the whole year of 2026.
Well, of course they did.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to have a whole another budget fight in January. It's going to undo all the firings, right? So all those people that were fired, which look like it actually might save some money for the federal government and punish the Democrats for being obstructionists, right? Like actual hardball political play that it looked like it was all bullshit. And yeah, it's now they're all back to work. Republicans fought to make sure that was part of it, right? They didn't like, you know, because what did the Republicans get, right? They didn't get anything out of this.
Yeah.
So, and then another provision is that Congress is just protecting their ass. Okay, so get this. And for good reason. I think this is actually probably a net a good thing, but it should be its own bill. The DOJ and the FBI must now alert the Senate if a lawmaker is investigated or subpoenaed. This is tied to the 2020 fake elector probes, where the GOP is basically shielding against overreach against the DOJ and FBI, which were caught spying on congressmen.
Right. Yes, I remember that.
So there's also part of the hidden clauses here is the bill lets senators sue the U.S. government for up to $500,000 in damages if federal investigators like the DOJ or FBI secretly collect their phone records during probes.
Wow.
Yeah. So they passed a bill. They put into this emergency funding bill their own cause of action for getting spied upon. Now, you don't have that right, sir.
No.
John Q. Public. The Patriot Act and, you know, Project Stellar Wind, which is slowly closed down now, but it was open, right? All the revelations from our good Russian friend.
Edward Snowden.
Edward Snowden. Those revelations didn't really change a whole lot. Section 702 still really doesn't protect you from anything, as long as they can say, well, we got a warrant. I clicked the button. To say that this guy is somehow connected to a foreign person, so therefore I can spy on him for the rest of his life.
Right.
So they protected themselves, but not you.
Yeah. How does that make you feel? Let us know in the comments.
I don't know what makes me feel.
People from China, they...
No, that's all right.
1776 will commence again.
1776 will commence again!
That one just works for everybody. Yeah. Oh, man. I know. It's not a good time for someone of our political persuasion to feel really good about the direction of the country or the government. I think I saw Dave Smith tweet just before we started recording something to the effect of, so basically we're just living through Joe Biden's second term or whatever, but with a secure border. And I think that really actually resonates with me because it does not feel like the campaign promises at all have mm-hmm. been held up by the Trump administration. It feels like he's really just doing the bidding of his donors at this point.
I mean, other than U.S. aid, to the degree that there was a shutdown or a disruption, good things, you know, DOGE, to the degree that they're requiring government to now give a reason for why they're spending our money somehow connected to something, you know, that might slow down some fraud, you know. You try to steel man the case that the administration is doing things of substance. They claim they've ended 8 wars. I don't know if that's true.
8?
7 wars.
Can you list
7,
them?
8? India, Pakistan?
Okay, there's one.
I don't know. I think the Indians actually disagree that we have played a role in that. I don't know. But
we'll count it for generosity. Number 2, Israel, Gaza. Can we count that? Is that over?
Well, the ceasefire isn't going great, but it's still technically in place. So, you know, there was a day where like 100 Gazans got blown up.
Okay,
so.
There's two.
Yeah.
Some shit in Africa,
yeah.
Maybe?
Oh, yeah. There's some stuff in Africa.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. I'm just saying, like, it's hard to look and really feel that great. I mean, the vibes are gone from where we're at the beginning of the year.
Yes.
It's also the economy has yet to really recover. Now, to be fair, you know, what Kyle has pointed out is that Bessent from the very beginning has said that this is going to take time for all the adjustments to happen. The Trump administration is really blaming interest rates for the problem with the economy. I disagree. The problem is inflation, and you need higher interest rates to fight inflation. So lowering interest rates would actually just push into more stagflation. Unemployment's kind of kicked back up a little bit from what I've read. So it's hard to really say that's
we're
solid.
We're seeing a lot of layoffs being announced for the next month. Mm-hmm. Verizon, Amazon. I mean, there's a lot.
Now,
tens of thousands of people.
It's important to remember that anytime you look at a figure like that, to always remember that the economy gains and loses 1 million jobs a month.
Right.
Right. 350 million Americans, one of the largest economies in the world. It's dynamic. So when you see an announcement like that, yes, that's impactful. Those jobs are gone forever now, and that's a thing that's going to play a variable. But it isn't. You don't want to think of it like, oh, now we've just lost that many jobs. Like, you know, it could be that at the exact same time a new factory opened up.
It ebbs and flows.
And it's also a national figure. So dislocations regionally have very high impacts for the people locally to that are impacted. Yes, absolutely. But the economy over the entire country is another thing.
Right.
So yeah, just keep that in mind.
Sure. But it's still not doing great, as you said.
Yes. Yeah. And it's hard to really look at any real measure where you're saying we're owning it right now. So it's a big part of the vibe. Yeah. Another one, and this is not going to help anything for those figures, is there's a new ban on strong THC hemp. So these are the hemp products that create gummies. Outlaws products with THC levels above 0.3%. And that's per the 2018 Farm Bill standards. This is closing a, quote, loophole for intoxicating items like THC edibles and drinks while sparing non-intoxicating CBD.
Okay, this is crazy to me.
Yeah.
Why? First of all, where is this coming from?
Close a loophole.
Well, yeah, okay. That's fine. Whatever.
Don't loopholes.
There are plenty of other loopholes that still exist in the legal code. which, you know, obviously we don't need to get into, but like, why the attack on cannabis? I feel like we were heading in a different direction. In fact, Trump himself had even said something fairly favorable things about rescheduling and all this. I think that it seemed like the trend was in the other direction. This it seems like it's coming out of left field.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't being led by the Trump administration. Of course, this is a negotiation in the Senate, and boomer senators don't like gummies because they're bad for you. And you don't know, Joe, you're not allowed to make adult decisions for yourself. DC needs to make them for you because they know better.
Joe not smart.
Yeah, Joe no smart.
Joe know what you put in Joe's body.
You know, it's crazy because it's so contrary to the current everything that got Trump elected. It's like, we want medical freedom. And it's like, you want gummies? Eat a bag of dicks. You know, like it's like, it's not even
dick-shaped gummies.
But you know what I mean? Like it's so contrary to the whole vibe that got this swept in this Congress and got Donald Trump elected.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I understand. And that's what Rand Paul, who is the only Republican to vote against the deal, that's what he said, was like, this is just ridiculous. Like, why are we putting in this extra stuff? Like, why you're literally giving up hundreds of billions of dollars of spending so that you can ban some THC products? What? You know what I mean?
Okay, I can't even think that that's just so a couple boomer senators could go back and tell their districts that they banned some marginally intoxicating hemp gummies.
Yeah, I mean the economic impact is pretty substantial. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's
hundreds of thousands of jobs. It's
millions of
small businesses. I mean, a lot of these folks. I mean, we've got hemp farming in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of it is industrial, and it's for, you know, the oil seed and the fiber and all the stuff. But yeah, I mean, we have recreational legal cannabis in this state. It's going to affect our economy. How does Steve Daines feel about that?
He voted for it, so I assume he's in favor of it. Yeah,
I don't even use weed, cannabis, THC anymore. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't have a dog in the fight, really. But I just think it's fucking stupid.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because the Republicans are defaulting back to this vision rather than the thing that got them elected, you know, ultimately. And this is just what we see over. Everyone runs like a paleo conservative libertarian hardcore anti-government, and then they get in office and they're like, well, this swamp feels a lot like a jacuzzi. I don't know. The alcohol industry's telling me I probably ought to do this. So they vote for it. I don't know if the alcohol industry will lobby for
that. Well, and you have to, that's the question you have to ask, is who would be the money putting, you know, their dollars behind this? It would be alcohol. It would be pharma. Yeah. You know, these are people potentially managing pain without opioids. Mm-hmm. You name it, right? I mean, these are like, we're talking about like veterans are going to be affected, you know, using cannabis to treat PTSD and depression.
They all sleep at night, just stuff like that. Lots of things. Like,
yeah, grandma who had a, you know, hip replacement, who finally found her way off of oxycodone or whatever, is now going to be back on the hard shit.
Mm-hmm.
Nice job.
Thanks.
Fucking senators, you
government.
Goddamn dinosaur pieces. Anyway, I'm getting angry. Okay, yeah. Next.
Yo, settle down there. Settle down.
No.
I don't know if I'm depressed. Like, okay, whatever. All right. So now got to run on the stream deck. All right. Extra cash. So they're spending $204 million more dollars for congressional safety.
Hold on. So we went from just paying for the things we were previously paying for to paying for more things.
Yes. We got some extra stuff.
I thought this was supposed to be a clean CR. Wasn't that the whole point?
Almost $1 billion for the Capitol cops. $852 million more dollars for the Capitol police.
You mean the same ones that like let the protesters in on January 6th?
They obviously needed more money. You know, obviously.
They weren't bringing their best.
$28 million for Supreme Court guards, which after the guy tried to bomb the Supreme Court,
yeah,
members.
That actually does seem fair.
Also, counterintelligence should like do counterintelligence, not like frame people.
Hey.
Maybe that.
There's an idea.
Yeah, like find people who are actually trying to do bad stuff and stop them rather than convincing some idiot to blow up a bridge or something. Yeah. That's
or like kidnap a governor or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, right. So that's what they got out of it.
Congrats, Republicans.
Oh, yeah.
Good job.
Really well done.
Master negotiators.
Not a single cent cut out of the budget.
Not great.
Yeah. All right. So Democrats, what they wanted, they wanted to extend the ACA enhanced benefits for 3 more years. That was what they wanted. Their hope was that they could make the Republicans look to be mean. The Democrats are like one of the Republicans want the Democrats to look like Mexicans. So like, that's how it shook out, right? And what they got, right, is the Democrats got everything, it looks like to me. They got the repeal removed, right? So with a promise by the Republicans that they're going to vote on this specifically mid-December. So it does die if it's not repealed. Right. So they're going to take a vote on it in December.
Yeah.
No, wait, that's not right. They wanted a 3-year extension, but the Republicans are going to vote on repeal in December. So what's going to happen then is just going to go down by the 60 vote rule. So the Republicans are claiming they're going to get a vote, but they're not going to get the
vote. They're not going to win the vote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was the point of the shutdown?
Well, it was Schumer's idea, wasn't it?
Well, no. Well, the Republicans knew Schumer was going to do it. Right. So like the strategy of the Republicans was what I assumed, looking at what their actions were and their rhetoric, was that they were going to use the shutdown to force the Democrats to negotiate and then compromise. Because the government shutting down, that's blamed on the Democrats, which, you know, to me, there wasn't a clear, like, correct me if I'm wrong here, and in the comments if I'm wrong here, but the coverage wasn't Republicans shut down the government. It was largely the Democrats and the Republicans shut down the government because they couldn't agree with it. Like, it was not what it's been in other cycles of government shutdown.
Right.
So what did they, if that's what it was, did the Democrats just call their bluff and then Republicans capitulated?
They kind of got put between a rock and a hard place. I mean, especially with the air traffic control thing, like that's, especially coming up on the holiday season, travel season, that would not bode very well for either side, really. I don't know why that would disproportionately fall on the Republicans, but it just seemed like, I don't know, it just seemed like, it seems like they're just always the ones who kind of cave, isn't it?
Yeah.
The Republicans are always the ones who end up on the losing end.
Yeah, I mean, if the corporate press is what you look to for an understanding about what the message is that the public is hearing, and all you see is Fox News and CNN saying how disastrous the government shutdown is, you're going to get the impending that the American people are pissed at you.
Right.
Right. And maybe that's true. And maybe there would have been a disaster if they would have waited till the holiday season and air traffic control was done. But once again, why wouldn't they just bring a bill to privatize air traffic control?
Because that reduces the control of the federal government, and they don't want that.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm sure there was some public sector employees union, you know, representing the FAA.
Republicans aren't sensitive to their interest groups. They don't care. They don't get donor money from the public employees union, stuff like that.
I mean, that's true. That's true.
So, like, I once again, you know, I don't have all the information. I'm just judging from what I've seen. It's really unfortunate that it went this way.
For sure. I actually have a question regarding some stuff that I saw Trump truthing about, or whatever you would say, regarding the filibuster, saying we have to end the filibuster in order to do all these things. I recall talking about the filibuster potentially being ended under the Biden administration during that Congress. What was that about? Can you shed any light on that, and, you know, why it's different if the Republicans suggest it than if the Democrats suggest it, if it is?
It's not different. Yeah. Okay. So I look at the filibuster discussion as the end result of the escalation of political insanity that we're in. And the peak of that is when you decide to violate and just basically end a tradition that's existed as long as the Republic has. Nothing in the Constitution creates the filibuster. The filibuster is created by the traditions of the Senate and the rules of the Senate. They can vote to change the rules with a simple majority, but they've always had a rule for the 60 votes. That was because the Senate was supposed to be the place of wisdom, where the place where the most removed from populist pressure branch of government that was at one point elected by the states and would have the state's interest in mind, not a population's interest in mind, that they would be more inclined to dialogue and discourse and full debate. While when you have 300-something House of Representatives, you have to have a much more robust committee structure where your debate happens, and less so on the floor, and a stronger speaker than the Senate is more decentralized in general, with more powers by any senator to interrupt the process and to take things different directions. Because it's a smaller body, right?
Right.
The filibuster was really meant to be the thing that would ensure that, to guarantee that nature, the nature of the institution, that direction, and was functionally, you know, made very much more difficult given the era that we're in, where it's very rare for someone to have a pure partisan majority. This is one of the reasons why the founders hated parties and hated faction. In fact, the entirety of the Constitution, as designed by Madison, is to try to prevent faction, right? It's this whole game theory of, like, how to, like, split people apart so that power can consolidate. Unfortunately, that has not worked out. People have become more partisan and more rabidly so, and so therefore there's just less willingness for people to cross party lines and to come up with a compromise. At least when it comes to the Democrats, especially, it seems like. And in this case, the Democrats really didn't have to give up anything because Republicans didn't insist on it.
Right.
You know, I don't know how long they could have lasted, but I just, why did we do the shutdown? I want someone, please, someone from DC, answer for me. Tell me, why did we do this? Because it didn't work out at all for you.
I don't know. That's a great question. If you know, drop it in the comments. We'd love to know.
Yep.
We would love to know.
So what they also got was a full restart for the SNAP and the parks and the museums and everything else. That's like quick restart. That money's right out the door right away. And of course, they got what they really wanted, which is all the back pay for all the workers. You know, that, and that's reasonable. I think the federal government should be a good employer. So if you work without pay, you should be compensated, right?
Absolutely.
But they also rehired all the people who left or got fired. And or I guess not fired. That would be the right word. Furloughed or
during the shutdown.
Yeah, yeah. Would it be like their position was eliminated? Laid off. There we go. So there's that. It's an interesting lesson that even though the Republicans still won the messaging battle, I think overall they didn't have whatever it took to stick long enough to do this. I mean, it might have just been timing. You might be right. It might have really just been like the holiday season, being like, we're gonna get smashed. And people are not going to forgive us for missing their holiday flights.
Right, right. Grandma, who voted for Trump, is going to be mad at Mike Johnson for not making a deal so that her grandson could come home for Christmas.
So I say, congressional Republicans, do it again in January. Just shut down the government for another month or two. Maybe we'll save some money. you know, the best thing we could do is just shut down the government for a long period of time. That's how we balance the budget.
You know, at this point, I'll try anything.
One of the things that I noticed too, Rand Paul made this point, is that when you shut down the government, basically you start, you basically become fiscally sane. How it works is that as you spend money as it comes in, according to an algorithm of highest priority, lowest priority. So new money comes in, goes to the first obligations, going down to the least obligated things. So, you know, in theory, we could just shut down the government for good and we'd still have a military and still be able to pay Social Security and stuff like that. As money comes in, it would get paid out.
I'm here for it.
At least for the what's it called? There's two categories. One is like the one you can touch and ones you can't. The negotiate, no.
It's like discretionary.
There you go. Non-discretionary. So yeah. Non-discretionary gets paid no matter what during shutdowns.
Yeah.
So that's like baked in. So if you're worried about that, well, great. Let's just shut down the government for good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Glad we settled that, everybody.
I guess my point is, come January, if they decide to do this again, it would, you know, it's a viable theory. All right. So we also had come out this week, kind of relevant to this, especially on the vibes, is this interview with Trump on Fox News and Laura Ingraham, where, I mean, I didn't get to watch the whole thing, but man, the clips aren't looking good, brother. Like these are no. tough. So let's talk about H-1B visas again. Yay.
There's never going to be a country like what we have right now.
And does that
mean Republicans have to talk about it, Laura?
And does that mean the H-1B visa thing will not be a big priority for your administration? Because if you want to raise wages for American workers, you can't flood the country with tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands
agree,
of foreign
but
workers.
You also do have to bring in talent. When
well, we
a
have
country
plenty of talented people
no,
here.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
We don't have talented people here.
No, you don't have. You don't have certain talents, and you have to. People have to learn. You can't take people off an unemployment line and say, "I'm going to put you into a factory where we're going to make missiles," or "I'm going to put."
How did we ever do it before?
Well, let
when
me
you
just.
And I were
I'll give you an
up.
Example. In Georgia, they raided because they wanted illegal immigrants. They had people from South Korea. That made Hyundai. Batteries all their lives. You know, making batteries are very complicated. It's not an easy thing. It's very dangerous. A lot of explosions, a lot of problems. They had like 500 or 600 people, early stages, to make batteries and to teach people how to do it. Well, they wanted them to get out of the country. You're going to need that, Laura. I mean, I know you and I disagree on this. You can't just say country's coming in, going to invest $10 billion to build a plant, and going to take people off an unemployment line who haven't worked in 5 years, right, and they're going to start making missiles.
Seems like quite a change to his tune about illegal immigration. When he says they wanted illegal immigrants out, wasn't it him?
Yeah. Bro, that was you.
Bro, I'm pretty sure that was you.
Well, I mean, like, and I'm sure, well, I mean, what's that topic here is the H-1B visas, right? So, like, this is technically legal immigration. And, like, this whole debate is how many should we have?
Sure.
Right?
Somewhere
between zero and infinity. And he's saying, well, it can't be zero. And she's like, why not? She's like, Donald, you made this monster, my bro. Like, by not having rhetoric that was like, immigration can be good, you know, and I'm sure he did that a little bit, but what people really heard was immigration bad, and therefore you're just in a rough spot now, man.
Yeah,
and that sucks. All right, your whole base is going to turn on you on this, and you kind of made this happen.
Yeah,
I mean it's just, and I'm not once again I'm not if someone is saying immigration should be zero, you can have a principled philosophical point of view about that, and I'm saying, well, maybe Trump has a point here that there might not need to be zero. It might need to be something else.
Well, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, we are the land of opportunity, or have been, and I think we still are and can be. And we don't want to close the borders entirely to anybody coming in who wants to contribute to the economy, of course. Like, I don't think anybody would maybe some people, but not most people would say, I want everybody out, especially those who want to contribute to the economy. It's the people who aren't, right? Mm-hmm. It's the illegal immigrants who are getting, you know, subsidies to buy homes that regular Americans can't buy because their wages haven't kept up with the inflation of housing. It's those issues. It's not someone coming over who has a degree in you know,
missile making
technology. Yeah. Missile making batteries, apparently.
Maybe we shouldn't have recently arrived immigrants making our missiles, though.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I'm just, you know, like, that might not be the best example. Maybe John Deere tractors,
you know, making
some tractors or.
Yep.
You know,
cars,
doing.
Cars are probably fine.
Doing software, you know, that's not related to national security. It just seems unwise to do that. To do missiles, you know?
That's true. I mean, certainly there should be some clearances around like national security, sensitive industries. Absolutely. Good example for him to use to shut down the conversation. But hyperbole, nonetheless.
Yeah. So I really get the perspective that people feel it's a theory that I have, and I see there's some people doing some really interesting work on this. The reason why we're becoming the right wing shift is there is in part because things feel so under threat. Things feel so chaotic and uncontrolled. And even when we had uncontrolled chaotic times in the past, say the 90s, which in their own terms at the time were considered chaotic and out of control, you didn't feel like there were these large hurricane-like forces that could just destroy your life out of the blue. And it feels like that's the moment, and that's why people are becoming more conservative. And therefore, when you're in that kind of mental space, your protection threat detection is really high. So you're like, you know, I know it's extreme, you know, and I know what our history is, and I know my ancestors moved here and they're not from here. But I really feel like we just got to put a pause on things for now. And so I'm in the zero immigration camp.
Sure.
Right? And I understand that point of view. It's just that as president, you have multiple constituencies to worry about. One of them is being, you know, the people who employ people. And the people who employ people are like, hey, you know, like traditionally we've always got it from here. And we're not really sure where else we're going to get it from. And they start talking to Trump and he starts going like, well, maybe I went a little too far on this anti-immigration rhetoric.
Well,
you know?
And I think it's very important to point out that the people who are in his ear on the H-1B thing probably primarily, if I had to guess, would be the tech industry CEOs, which he's having dinners with and roundtables and press conferences. It's very clear that Silicon Valley is very involved in this administration. I mean, you know, you've got guys like David Sachs actually in the administration. You know, obviously you got him sitting down with Zuckerberg and Sam Altman and Bill Gates and all these guys. So like clearly they have vested interests in continuing to preserve their hiring pipeline as it exists. And he's not wrong. I mean, he says it in a clunky way, but he's not wrong. You can't just learn to code overnight or whatever, right? If you were a truck driver before, you can't just become a high-tech worker tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Like that does take time to kind of turn over the economy in that way, to re-educate people and move people around within different industries. But I do see how it looks bad to people who are in middle America, right? Who are struggling, who are still feeling the effects of inflation, whether or not Trump wants to admit that inflation still exists in his presidency, whether or not he wants to admit that the economy is not doing as well as he wants to say it's doing. Like people are still hurting. And of course they're going to go to that sort of protective freeze up, keep the others out kind of mentality around that. I think that makes perfect sense.
And this really might return to the point I've been making since the beginning of the trade war, which is maybe the order of operations is just wrong.
Right.
You know, like what if he just spent the first 2 years not messing with trade, but deregulating, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then getting the economy hot again in that like 2019 hot feel. Maybe you can do some spending fights, and then you can justify those spending fights by how great the economy is. And then maybe you can pile on top of that some, you know, some immigration, like, of course you have to do the immigration stuff right away, but then you can start doing the legal immigration restrictions that you want.
Sure.
Right. Cause then you'll have a more dynamic economy that people can exit their current place in and to fill into a role someplace else. But in the current economy, it doesn't feel like 2019 right now.
No.
Right. It doesn't feel like that. It was a glorious moment right before COVID where things really actually were like, you know, maybe Trump is onto something. This is really working, you know?
Yeah.
And it did not feel like that yet, man. So like you got to get back to that place before you can really ask for the kind of dynamism to take the risk of reduction of legal immigration.
Right.
Perhaps like that might be the right mental model to think about.
I think absolutely. And, you know, to analogize it one other way, it's like, you know, if you're ever dealing with a wood stove, right? I don't know if anybody at home has a wood stove or has ever used one, but you can't just turn the damper down to decrease the airflow into the fire without having a really hot fire first. You got to get that fire cooking, all the air, everything wide open, and then you can start to kind of tighten things up and get it to settle into a really healthy, sustainable burn, right? And we did not have a hot fire to begin with.
That's a great analogy. I don't think Trump's ever used a wood stove before. I'd suspect he's a boiler guy.
You know, he's not putting a wood stove in that new ballroom. I think that's a misfire, if you ask me. I think every ballroom deserves a wood stove.
Andrew Jackson be pissed. All right. Next on this one, on Chinese students. This one went really viral.
Folks are not thrilled about this idea of hundreds of thousands of foreign students in the United States. We have about 350,000 Chinese. One point during COVID, you were going to, you know, push to, you know, get them out, but that was pulled back. You've said as many as 600,000 Chinese students could come to the United States. Why, sir, is that a pro-MAGA position when many American kids want to go to school and there are places not for them and these universities are getting rich off Chinese money?
Sure. Never said about China, but we do have a lot of people coming in from China. We always have China and other countries. We also have a massive system of colleges and universities. And if we were to cut that in half, which perhaps makes some people happy, you would have half the colleges in the United States go out of business.
So what?
Well, I think that's a big deal.
Are they fans?
You would have the historically
of the United States.
Yeah, but you would have, as you know, historically black colleges and universities would all be out of business. You would have a system of colleges, and
all right, you gotta. Yeah, I know you want to say something, guy. Historically black colleges,
are they disproportionately welcoming Chinese students to HBCUs? Is that a thing?
I don't know. Grasping for the most sympathetic college you could think of? He just went there. I mean, he's a creature of the 80s, right? I mean, that might be where that came from, because I don't know if they're using a lot of that.
Keep playing. I'm going to grok that.
All right.
Universities.
So we're dependent on China to keep our university system going?
But I think it's good to have, outside countries. Look, I want to be able to get along with the world.
They're not the French. They're the Chinese. They spy on us. They steal our intellectual property.
What, do you think the French are better?
Yeah.
Really? I don't know. I'll tell you. I'm not so sure. We've had a lot of problems with the French, where we get taxed very unfairly on our technology, they put 25% taxes on American products. Look, assuming everyone treats us badly, because that's the way I am, but we take in trillions of dollars from students. You know, the students pay more than double when they come in from most foreign countries. I want to see our school system thrive, but at the same time, I want to be, I know you and I disagree. Yeah. We're never going to agree on it, but that's okay. And it's
all right. That's it. So you got to keep the colleges open because they're really important employers. It's a jobs program now, right? Is that what he's saying?
That's what it seems like. It seems like, certainly colleges have made a lot of money off of raising a lot of tuition on a lot of students, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's obviously gone crazy. And, you know, lenders and stuff as well. Weird the way he makes this argument. After grokking it, 2.5% of enrollment at HBCUs is international students, whereas... In non-HBCU colleges and universities, it's 5.9% according to recent numbers. So not
half as much.
Not a significant portion of the population, regardless.
Can you imagine being like the one Asian kid at Rutgers? Like that's gonna be wild.
Probably having a great time.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. No. I bet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways,
no. Never mind. I'm not gonna say it. I'm not.
So,
anyway.
Exactly. This whole China thing.
People from China, they love me.
You know, it's like he made China the big scary thing.
Yeah.
Now the hawkishness is actually kind of boiled down a little bit. It's at a much lower simmer than it was in Trump 1.
Yeah.
Overall, which I'm happy about. I don't want to go to war with China over Taiwan or
There's trade hawkishness and contention, but it's not, you know, saber rattling the same way.
Not in the same way. And we haven't had any of those recent, remember like last year, I don't know, it was last year, 2 years ago, there was a lot of like, near flybys and like all of this contention, or this battleship was really close to another battleship in the
South
China Sea.
Can't forget the Chinese spy balloon.
The Chinese spy balloon.
Flew right over Montana.
Yep. So those sorts of things haven't happened. There seems like that's gone down as the trade war's ramped up, and that's been contentious. But he recently just cut a deal with October 30th. He met in South Korea with the President Xi, Winnie the Pooh himself. It was about a 90-minute meeting. And the U.S. gave some concessions, right? It cut tariffs on Chinese imports by 10%. It delayed Section 301 of tariffs to 2026. So he's kind of like keeping the sword of Damocles out there for good behavior. And then eased some export controls and inverted the 100% additional tariffs that he had slapped on, or threatened to slap on, rather. China is going to buy at least 12 million metric tons of U.S. soybeans. So big hand for the farmers there. I don't think we should be growing soybeans, but, whatever. We should have more beef in America, personally.
Amen.
If I could centrally plan it, that's what I would do.
Most of it is actually cattle feed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice. We shouldn't feed cattle soybeans.
Well, no.
It's a terrible idea.
They should eat grass.
Yeah, all that estrogen.
Yeah.
Good.
I mean, it's just calories.
Yeah. So, and they suspended the rare earth minerals export restrictions and port fees. So, therefore, making rare earth minerals, which are really critical to high tech, to get flowing again. So, give the lessen the trade restrictions for the farmers and for Silicon Valley functionally. Yeah. Yeah, that's the interest group of it.
And so, who is the, is it Silicon Valley then that wants the Chinese students?
Probably. Yeah, it's probably that. I mean, there's probably, it's engineering. I mean, on average, and this is stereotype because it's probably mostly true. Foreign students come here and they don't study underwater basket weaving. You know,
they don't study gender studies or whatever.
I want to have it only good can happen on here, but I don't have it, man. Bennett, I need to add that.
Bennett, just play it right now.
Nothing bad can happen. It can only good happen.
It is. It's unfortunate because the trade war has yet to stabilize to the point where that their supposed benefits can happen. Will that happen or not? I'll give you guys the benefit of the doubt. I think you got about 4 more months. And if you don't do it in the next 4 months, it's going to get really nasty.
Right. I wish Kyle were here because, he is always the one of really going to bat for the administration on some of these policies. Like, it's a grand scheme. It's going to take time. I would love to hear how he would kind of picture how this is going
to
play out.
We talked a little bit about it while you were gone. And, and a lot of it is, we need to, it's always been a 2 to 4 year plan. The trick is that we're in a democracy, and 2 to 4 years is not a great timeline.
It's not. You have to wonder, especially in light of how the off-year elections just went in a couple of different states. Mm-hmm. Democrats seem to do, disproportionately well. How are the midterms going to look?
Right.
What is he going to be doing to cater to the needs of his voters that are hopefully going to install more Republicans so that he can do more of his agenda?
Mm-hmm. And you would guess that a lot of this is only a component of the overall deal that was discussed in South Korea, because the things that were discussed and actually put into here are the overt trade war stuff. But perhaps things like the 600,000 students, maybe TikTok, were the other things discussed. And we have this interesting theory from Harrison H. Smith over at InfoWars about that. And I think this is no evidence for it, but it is interesting.
And all. Oh, wait, I never told you how it tied in. Okay, let me explain how this is all Israel's fault. Let me tie everything I've talked about so far into the fact that it's Israel. Why are we letting in 600,000 Chinese students, doubling the number that are currently here, 277,000, over doubling it? Because that was a key concession that Trump made during his negotiations with China over our trade agreement with them this year. Another primary sticking point of that was, of course, the sale of TikTok from China to Larry Ellison so he could install an IDF soldier at the heart of the operation in order to silence anybody that speaks out against Israel or the Jewish diaspora. So that's why we're taking in 600,000 Chinese students, because that was the concession necessary for America to make so Israel could control a important social media company here in America. That's what it's about.
Now, we don't have any material evidence of that. But the timeline is interesting. The timeline works something like August, we're kicking on new tariffs, extra pressure on China. August 27th, toward the end of August, he says the 600,000 Chinese students comment. And then September 25th, Larry Ellison buys TikTok. October 30th, the trade deal's cut. So you can't look at it like the entire conversation happened in South Korea. There's obviously this conversation happens before he actually goes there. But it is an interesting set and series of events to look at.
Yes.
Because the reality is that most of what the government does isn't done in the light. It's done in the dark. So we are forced, because of the lack of any amount of transparency or clarity about what the government's doing or decision making, especially when you have someone like Trump who is not really giving a robust answer to this question. Like, it was one thing for him to say, we're not going to cut it. It's another thing to say, we're going to double it. You know what I mean? Like, right. That looks like a concession.
It does.
And then additionally to that, you know, like, he can generate his other arguments, like they pay more tuition, but that tuition isn't going to then subsidize the tuition of American students. That's just enriching the coffers of the colleges.
Right.
You know, so like, yeah. So they can hire more DEI administrators and whatnot.
No, DEI is out, remember?
Yeah. They're still doing that.
We're not doing that.
They're colleges, man. They're never going to stop doing that shit.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah. So interesting theory. I don't know if it's true, but it's one of the more compelling thing I've seen mentioned about the administration in this deal to explain it, because, I mean, you saw it. He had no real answer, right?
Like, no.
And that's not very Trumpian. And it wasn't even the kind of answer that would give you that sense of like, oh, there's a vision here. Or like, he's like suggesting something. You can't really 4D chess your way out of that one.
No.
Pretty tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want him to succeed. I want to be clear about this, because if you're a Trump fan, like, he is the president of the United States. I want a good economy. I want growth and all these things. And I want him to succeed. And I would be, if it is so that Larry Ellison can buy TikTok, that would not be the thing I want to see, right? That is not America first. As much as allowing twice as many Chinese students in for that, you know, that's a trade-off sort of thing. Like, it's neither good nor bad, but it depends on the individual qualities of these individual Chinese students.
Right.
But like Laura Ingraham said, and I think this is totally reasonable, the colleges aren't on your side, Mr. President. Like, yeah. they're not exactly pulling in your favor.
Not really.
Yeah. So why do we care how good they're doing?
Right.
Good question.
Really good question.
Yeah.
Still out of reach. And another thing that your administration is trying to tackle, many Americans, the average age of first-time home buyers are now up to age 40, which is sad. The country you and
but
I grew
I
up
I inherited
in.
That. Look, you have to understand.
Right, but let me get to the question, though, because your housing director has proposed something that has enraged your MAGA friends, which is this 50-year mortgage idea. So a significant MAGA backlash, calling it a giveaway to the banks and simply prolonging the time it would take for Americans to own a home outright. Is that really a good idea?
It's not even a big deal. I mean, you know, you go from 40 to 50 years, and what it means is you pay something less from 30. That some people had a 40, and then now they have a 50. All it means is you pay less per month. You pay it over a longer period of time. It's not like a big factor. It might help a little bit. But the problem was that Biden did this. He increased the interest rates, and I have a lousy Fed person who's going to be gone in a few months.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. What do you think, Joe?
Dude.
I saw your eye roll so hard, I thought you were going to pass out there for a minute.
I think I did, actually. I mean, okay, so giving him the benefit of the doubt that maybe it's not a major part of their like housing reform thing. I feel like this has been a big issue for a lot of their administration, and there was a bit of bluster and like hype leading up to this announcement that we're now the peons of America are so lucky that we have this new thing that the Trump administration is working on. We're going to allow you to basically never pay off your home in your entire lifetime. Mm. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Oh, to save like $200 a month on your monthly payment across, you know, the life of your loan. And as you noted there, or you could see in the Chiron, adding something like 86% additional interest to the life of your loan. So, I mean, I think one of the best commentators that I listen to regarding economic issues is George Gammon, Rebel Capitalist podcast. He's great. Highly recommend you check him out. His look at it was basically like, you know, if the average home in America is $500,000, you're going to end up paying basically $1 million in interest over the life of that loan. Mm-hmm. That's not helping people. Mm-hmm. It's going to take you for the first like 10 years at like say 6% interest. It's going to take you, you're going to be applying $1,000 a year to the principal of your loan, mm-hmm. paying $25,000 a year on that mortgage. $1,000 a year in equity. Mm-hmm. So then he says, if we have a 5% correction in the housing market, you're upside down. Mm-hmm. And we have 2008 all over again. People are just mailing the keys into the bank because you owe more than the house is worth. Mm-hmm. I don't know who in the economic team in this administration said, yeah, this is it. This is going to really work.
And I'll tell you, I had really high hopes that HUD would be announcing something in housing reform, and maybe it can still happen. Something to say our new policy is if local governments want money, they need to deregulate their housing markets. They need to look at their code and scrap out everything that is not for safety, period.
That would be too good because that would be too conservative.
Yeah, right.
Right? That would be too free market.
We could win something on something for just a second.
Instead, we just have to give the banks more interest. Like that is all that this really does. It doesn't really help people. Like the average home buyer does not help them buy a house in this economy. Mm-hmm. Especially when you have outfits like Blackstone and all the other big asset managers buying up entire subdivisions of homes and turning them into rentals. Mm-hmm. And they're paying over, like well over asking price that people could never compete with. And they're paying cash. Mm-hmm. Like we have a circumstance in our housing market right now in this country that is completely insurmountable for the average person, mm-hmm. period. And a 50-year mortgage is not going to solve it. Not even freaking close.
Not even close. And they, obviously they're saying this is an option. And he kind of tries to walk it into, it could help a little bit for some people. But when the average age of the buying is so late, right? It's almost 40. It's like 38. She said 40, but it's really 38 was the number. That means that you're not ever going to pay it off.
Right.
Right. You'll never have the advantage of owning the house you live in and therefore not having the mortgage bill.
No.
Even when you're retired, that means you're 10 years in retirement and maybe then you get to pay it off.
Maybe. You know? Maybe. Yeah. It's seriously just the continuation of the meme of the WEF from the last several years is to own nothing and be happy.
Yeah.
Like you will never own that house and you don't own it anyways because you have to pay property taxes to the government every fucking
in
year
states
anyway.
With property taxes.
Yes.
Now, Montana is one of the ones that have a lot of property tax, but yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. No, you're not wrong. And that's the other tragedy is that if they just did the things they said they were going to do, things would be so much better. There would be some wins that we could celebrate.
Yeah.
But they just haven't, in part because boomers who make up a lot of the existing asset owners are pushing against the reforms that are happening in some states like Montana that are advancing a more free market property rights-based housing policy. Because they don't want the competition in the market, the increased supply. So they're using government to keep it artificially scarce.
Right. They don't want the increased supply because it decreases their property value. And they've been told for their whole lives that their home is their biggest asset. And the equity that they've built in that through appreciation because of inflation over the course of their lifetimes is substantial. That's their retirement. So of course they don't want to see that go down. I understand that. That's a very plain incentive to see. Mm-hmm. But we're in an intractable situation here where the only way that young people are going to acquire homes is if they inherit them from those boomers. Mm-hmm. Right?
That's right. That's right. And they're living longer and the economy has been rough on those millennials, man. They've had to live through the financial crisis, COVID, you know, the whole shebang. And so there's a lot of people who have failed launched and have had a really tough time. So that turnover, it's tough to say, right? Because I don't want anyone to die. But because they're living a lot longer, it has made it real tough for any kind of a generational wealth to formulate for the average person who is under 40.
Yeah.
I'm not even saying, like, it's weird. Why does the government set how long loans can be? I don't know why that is. Like, you know, if banks can't offer that product, sure, should they?
I
do people want to be done with their money? okay, fine. But this is just not the direction that the federal government should be taking. It should be leveraging its powers to increase the supply.
Right.
That would be the basic Republican thing to do traditionally. Right. But they're not listening to the needs of the young people who got them elected.
Right. Yeah. Right.
All right. So
you know what'll make it better though, David?
Yeah.
Some cash in your pocket.
Yeah, let's get some stimmies.
We got stimmy season back in action, right? Just in time for Black Friday.
People that are against tariffs are fools. We're now the richest, most respected country in the world with almost no inflation and a record stock market price. 401ks are higher than ever. And we're taking in trillions of dollars and will soon begin paying down our enormous debt.
Hold on, you gotta say that more emphatically. It's a capitalized.
Oh, enormous debt.
Thank you.
$37 trillion. Record investment in the USA. Plants and factories going up all over the place. A dividend of at least $2,000 a person, not including high-income people, will be paid to everyone. I think it's Rome. You know, it's Rome. It's literally just you're at the Gladiator Column. You're just chucking bread up into the into the area. They're catching it.
It's bread and
circuses.
You're
just out in the streets just handing out, you know, devalued currency to everybody, and they're like, I just love Caesar so much. Our economy is such a zombie economy. The Republican president is cutting stimmy checks. Like, guys.
Okay. Did we learn nothing
from COVID? Right.
Did we learn literally nothing from COVID? What happened to asset prices after stimmy checks went out during COVID?
I don't remember, Joe.
Gosh, well, if only Kyle Reary could tell us what happened. They went through the fucking roof, yeah. Obviously.
And here's why. Here's COVID, 2020.
Yep.
Look at that verticality right there.
Yeah. So this is the M2?
M2 money supply.
Money supply. So this is the amount of cash in circulation. We added a lot.
Oh, wait. The 5-year doesn't really help us, does it? There we go.
We added a lot.
Yes. And so this is why inflation is what it is. And it keeps going like this because these are the care packages. And Ukraine and everything else. This is the problem, ladies and gentlemen. When you can't buy your house, it's because the government is printing away the value of a currency. That's why it's there. And until Republicans can actually hold their people accountable to the thing that they said they're going to do and actually develop the mental model that says, no, if you're not reforming spending, you're not helping anyone.
Yeah.
If you're elected on a populist ticket, you're not going to help the people who got you elected if you don't adjust inflation, which is the number one reason why people voted for Mandani and voted for the Virginia governor Democrat, even though that guy was a murderous piece of shit. The guy running for attorney general, right?
Jay Jones.
Yeah. So all of that stuff is because at the end of the day, it's the economy, stupid.
Yep.
So of the things that Kyle pointed to when he was laying out the Bessent plan, it was tariffs, it was immigration, it was regulatory reform. It was spending. And we haven't got nothing on those latter two. Right. And if we don't get something there, a win of some kind, something substantial, you got to, you know, just like you got to get something there or it's down the tubes, man. The next cycle is going to be real rough.
Yeah.
That's why I said 4 months, because that's when primaries are really going to start kicking off.
Yep.
And Republicans are going to have a hell of a time in the primaries if it keeps up like this.
Yep.
I mean, between the Epstein files, between, you know, our potential overthrowing the government of Venezuela, because that's, I don't know, ignored now, but will be a big deal as soon as we're actually throwing the coup. It's hard to justify, you know, any amount of conservative MAGA America First support or any amount of energy or good vibes when you can't seem to pull together the most basic thing, which at least would be regulatory reform. Some went on that, like just at least just put out a press announcement telling me all the great regulations you've repealed. You know, what happened to those? They did that in Trump 1.
Yeah.
You know, I give me something, you know, say, hey, we repealed this many regulations. Do a Malay thing.
Yeah. Afuera some shit.
Yeah. Afuera. We got to get that on here. Afuera.
We do need to get that on there. Yeah.
All right. And one more black pill. And this is a little bit off topic, but yeah. There he is with Al Jilani.
All grown up.
Actually, is Al Jilani was actually his terrorist name. I didn't realize this. He had a terrorist alias, which was Al Jilani.
Oh.
His actual name is Al-Sharaa. I can't pronounce it.
What do you let me read it?
I don't think it's in here. Oh, yeah, there you go.
Al-Sharaa. Ahmed Hussein Al-Sharaa. Yeah. You had it.
Yeah. There's just so many A's. I like want to bring it out. Like, Al-Sharaa. Yeah. Anyways. Fuck that guy. I don't care. I don't have to be polite to him. All right. So it was an honor to spend time with Ahmed Hussein Al-Sharaa, the new president of Syria. How did he become president of Syria? That's a great question. Where we discussed all the intricacies of peace in the Middle East, of which he is a major advocate.
A major advocate of peace. The guy who violently overthrew Bashar al-Assad and assumed power to become president. Big fan of peace. All right, continuing on.
I look forward to meeting and speaking again to the former Al-Qaeda member. Everyone is talking about the great miracle that is taking place in the Middle East. Having a stable and successful Syria is very important to all the countries in the region.
Yeah.
Whew. Yeah, so the last guy was a dentist. Guess what his skills are? Overthrowing governments and head chopping.
Hey, now, he's probably pretty decent at pulling teeth.
Yeah, I bet. Torture?
Yeah.
I bet torture. I bet he could teach a CIA thing or two. Yeah.
They call it oral surgery. He's all grown up now.
He's all grown up. All grown up. That guy right there. Man. Trimmed his beard, threw on a suit, and we're just like all smiles.
Looks like he's eating pretty well.
So if you told the average American in 2002 that there would be an Al-Qaeda member who created ISIS, and, you know, living in a cell in Iraq after he went to Iraq simply to attack American soldiers. And then he would go on to then, you know, run ISIS and Syria and then form his own little group and rebrand and then go overthrow Syria's dictator. Not a good guy. Not saying I'm a fan. But if anything, I can't tell that person in 2002 that we'd have a former Al-Qaeda operative in the White House after our CIA backed him in the coup along with Turkey and Israel. Would be quite the story.
They'd call you crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never could that ever happen.
No.
Much less a guy from New York doing it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I don't get me wrong. I understand. I'm not trying to be immature about this. I understand that you have to deal with realities in foreign policy. It's just our selective dealing with realities in foreign policy. We only meet with people, like the worst people, when it benefits the hegemony. And not always ours, like this vague one that just, like, for some reason makes overthrowing Syria super important. You know, like, that's not in America's interest. And meeting with this guy and acknowledging or doing this sort of thing after what we experienced on 9/11, I just can't... I don't know. If you're a veteran, I don't know how you tolerate this, how you look at this. And after all the sacrifice in Iraq, this guy was on the other side of that fight, you know, and just live with that. You know, I can't even, the disrespect is just profound.
It's pretty mind boggling, to be honest. And I mean, not to end on this sour note, but it really does feel like it's just a bottle full of black pills from the Trump administration right now.
they got to get a win, man. They got to figure out how to get out of the spiral they're at. You know, I feel like I might be underplaying some good things that are happening. Obviously, the border, right? You know, hey.
Yeah, but you can't just hang the border up over everything and say it's all good.
The border
cannot be our rose-colored glasses.
I'm not saying it justifies it.
I know.
I only understand. I understand the people who are like, look, man, at least we got that. You know, and I can just sympathize with that, but also say let's not lower our expectations, you know, too much to the point where we're now being okay with this. You know, it's so disappointing, right? I mean, we're in charge. We could have said, pick someone better than the Al-Qaeda guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give us someone better. Right? I mean, we have all this power. Why do we settle for this? You know?
Well, we backed that guy. So obviously we know he's a good puppet dictator. I mean, president.
We know he's good at overthrowing governments. We don't know he's going to be good at that.
That's fair.
In fact, he can't even control his own people. They're slaughtering. They were just not too long ago slaughtering minorities in the country. Right?
Yeah. I mean,
like, come on. Oh, but But I'm not going to let this end on a low note, no matter how many black pills I put at the end. The podcast is at 2,000 subs. Thank you so much for subscribing and for viewing and for watching and commenting and participating in the Discord. Pulled stuff right out of the Discord for this story, for these stories this week. So thank you so much for the guys in the Discord. We got lots of memeing, especially on the Stimmies this week. I got a good laugh out of that. And, you know, look, guys, this is
1776 will commence again.
This is fucking America. We are not going to let this be the story. This is not the end. America is big and powerful and full of great people who are not going to let this spiral forever. We just got to keep on moving. So don't give up. Don't be swallowing those black holes. Spit them out. Throw them up and, you know, look to the future because it can be bright. We just got to keep working.
Well said.
Yeah.
On that note, thank you so much for watching Human Reaction. For David Rand and Kyle and Bennett, who are not here, I'm Joe Sheehan. We will see you in the next one.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com.